You are Locked On Rockets, your daily Houston Rockets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Missed opportunity. James Harden, now owner of the second longest streak in NBA history of consecutive games scoring 30-plus points, had 42 on Wednesday night in Minnesota, that tying Wilt Chamberlain for the second longest in NBA history, had 8 made threes, also 6 assists, 5 rebounds, yet the Rockets lost to a 27-30 Minnesota team by double digits in a game they led by 7 midway through the second half. One that was a great opportunity on paper to make up for some of the bad losses that they've had this season. Most recently, blowing the 26-point lead to Oklahoma City on Saturday night. The loss to New Orleans, who sat nearly all of their top 5 or 6 players outside of Drew Holiday a couple of weeks ago. Brooklyn and Orlando in January, just to name a few. This was a game that even the Rockets, without Clint Capella, out-rebounded by 10, would have been very useful in terms of making up some of the bad losses you've had. It was right there on the table. James Harden, even on a bad shoulder, seemingly was willing his way to the finish line and trying to get the Rockets there as well. Had 9 points on 3 consecutive threes in the final 3 minutes. Every one of them seemed to be getting the Rockets back into the game, getting them a real chance to steal it. And yet, in a familiar theme this season, Harden did not have enough help, and the Rockets were unable to get a stop. With that, welcome in to another post-game episode of Locked On Rockets, your home, for better or for worse, for daily podcast commentary on all things Houston Rockets basketball. As always, I'm your host, Ben Dubose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship in Houston. As we chat this Wednesday night, as mentioned, the Rockets are losers 121-111 in Minnesota. The loss drops the Rockets to 33-24. The Timberwolves, with the win, improved to 27-30 in what was a rematch of the first-round Western Conference playoff series, 1-8 this time a season ago. It doesn't look like the Rockets will be anywhere near the one line this year. They're now 9 games back in the loss column of the Warriors for the top seed, and they're now 5 games back of the Thunder, who have won 2 of the 3 head-to-head matchups, so they're well-positioned for the tiebreaker as well, for number 3 spot, and 6 games back in the loss column of the Denver Nuggets for the 2 spot. So the Rockets right now, they're squarely on the 4-5 line with the Portland Trail Blazers. No matter what happens with the Warriors-Blazers game tonight, the best case result for the Rockets, assuming that we take the Warriors out of the equation because the 1 seed is likely gone, being 9 games back, 8 with your best case result. Well, the Blazers, even if they lose the game, they'll be tied with you in the standings entering the All-Star break, but they have won 2 of the 3 this season, so they have the tiebreaker. So we may be entering a point in which the Rockets have to ask themselves, would you rather be the 6th seed than the 4 or the 5 if it gets you on the opposite side of the bracket from the Warriors? We'll talk about that more as we move our way through our 3 points recap. Tonight we'll be doing so in a little more bigger picture style because this is the last Rockets game for 8 days. Now 57 games into the season, it's really the 2/3 mark. But effectively, it feels like the season is split in two. Even though 2/3 of the season is gone, this is now the break because the All-Star game is this Sunday. The Rockets don't play again until next Thursday night against LeBron James and the LA Lakers at Staples Center. That will be an opportunity for Harden to take second by himself of 30-plus point consecutive games, the streak that is now at 31 after his 42-6-5 in Minnesota. 8 made threes, 15 of 34 overall, also had 6 assists, 5 rebounds, all while playing with a bum shoulder. It didn't look like he wanted to go inside as much as he normally does, only had 4 free throws the entire game, which I think speaks to the fact that with that bum shoulder, he's not playing at 100%. I doubt we'll see him anywhere near that until the other side of the break. Hopefully, also bumped knees late in the fourth quarter, which looked scary, and he was struggling to walk for a little bit after that, and then somehow, as mentioned, he got back into it, made 3 threes in the final 3 minutes of the game. Every one of them seemed like, okay, this is when the Rockets make their closing kick, and even though the Timberwolves are bigger, the Rockets don't have Clint Capella, Houston has the MVP, that should be enough, and yet the Rockets just could not get a stop. It's a familiar theme. They have a 6'8" Kenneth Faried, who's not a good defender, even aside from being short. And then at the end of the game, while they had such little trust in Free that they took him out altogether, went small, and at that point, the Timberwolves with Karl Anthony Towns, who had 25-9, just towered over the Rockets. Also, Dario Saric, who had 15-8. Minnesota, 47-37 rebounding advantage. That's a very familiar theme all season long for the Rockets. Also, Minnesota, 13 offensive rebounds. We praised Houston's effort on Monday because they limited Dallas to just 3. That was an outlier. Tonight, more of the same. The Rockets go on the road, and Minnesota just kicked their butt on the glass. So, in many ways, what happened is a bit understandable because the Rockets don't have Clint Capela. We've said throughout his absence that he is Houston's second most indispensable piece after James Harden. It's no longer the Harden and CP3 show. It's the Harden and Capela show. And against a Minnesota team that I understand they're 27-30, on paper it's a bad loss, but really it's a terrible matchup. An all-star Karl Anthony Towns in the middle against a Rockets team starting Kenneth Faried, no Clint Capela, been a bad rebounding squad all year and on the road. It's a tough matchup. You tip your hat to the Timberwolves, a much bigger team. Also, Jeff Teague, 27 points, 12 assists, 11 of 16 shooting. He reminded you why the Rockets a year ago thought they had a problem in terms of containing dribble penetration the first two rounds of the playoffs when Jeff Teague, Derrick Rose, Alec Burks, Dante Exum, guys that you wouldn't think of as dynamic playmakers, gave the Rockets fits a lot of times, particularly Chris Paul and Eric Gordon, who are good team defenders, not necessarily the best in terms of denying dribble penetration at their age. They don't move laterally as well as younger guys would seem to. That's part of why the Rockets, and Daryl Morey said after drafting the Anthony Melton, put a priority on that in the offseason. Now, they traded Melton. They signed Austin Rivers in part because of his on-ball defense. I know Rivers gets kind of crapped on a little bit because of his liabilities away from the ball. He'll have lapses to where he allows a backdoor cut, but he can still play very good on-ball defense, fluster guys with his athleticism, his instincts. Just ask Russell Westbrook. And Rivers sitting out tonight, last day before the All-Star break. He's on a sore right elbow, so he's getting that right. The Timberwolves also sat Andrew Wiggins. It's a time in the NBA, if anybody has a nagging injury, unless they're James Harden, you let him sit so that you can get him 9-10 days off to let that injury actually heal, combining the final game off with the 7-8 days off after that. So really, I don't feel that much more differently about the Rockets after this game. And even without Capela, the Rockets, we expect this to be the last game that Capela misses, thankfully. Assuming all checks out well in practice next week, he'll be back on the other side of the break when they open up against the Lakers in LA. And they won 9 of the 15 games that he missed. That's a 600 winning clip. If you had asked me, in fact, I did a podcast the day of the injury. I said that 9 wins, that was my upside scenario. I was hoping they'd win 7, just scrap out, somehow get close to 500. They went at a 600 pace. So by and large, the Rockets have fared very well without Capela. They have survived. It hasn't always been pretty, and it could have even been better because you look at some of the losses they had in there. We mentioned New Orleans, Oklahoma City, they're up by 26. They easily could have been 11-4, 12-3 if you twist a couple of those. You can throw Brooklyn in there as well. So it feels worse than it actually is. 9-6, you can live with that without the guy who is so critical to your defense and your rebounding. This was just a rough matchup, especially when you factor in no Capela, so they have all the size, the rebounding advantage, and then you take away the on-ball defense of Austin Rivers, and also give Jeff Teague some credit. I don't care who's defending him. 27 points, 12 assists, 11 of 16 shooting, including a step-back three to answer Harden when he had everything going the last couple of minutes. It's tough to shoot that well against air. So no, it's not all just bad defense by Chris Paul, Eric Gordon, whoever you want to blame. No, Jeff Teague had some incredible shot making, and if he shoots at that clip, and by the way, part of Minnesota's record, before this week he had missed 8 consecutive games. So Jeff Teague plays that well. You don't have Clint Capela. This is a rough matchup, and even with this loss, Houston has won 9 of their last 15 without Clint. So while it's frustrating, I don't really feel that differently about the Rockets after this game than I did going in. By and large, Harden was still brilliant. If he plays that well, you have a chance against anybody. As far as the defensive rebounding issues, you're going to get Clint Capela back. So I do believe that these problems are fixable. It's a frustrating game, but I don't really feel it differently about the Rockets. These are issues that they can fix. The problem for Houston is that it's a missed opportunity because of all those other games that we just mentioned. The Rockets, they should be better than 33-24. They had a bad start to the year, which we'll talk about more in segment 3 as we wrap up the podcast. But for now, even in this stretch without Clint Capela, they're 9-6, which is great. They've done everything you could ask. and yet you need them to do even more than what they you can reasonably ask to make up for all the things that have happened this year. The injuries, Chris Paul missing time, Clint Capella, go on down the list, Eric Gordon. You need to steal games to make up for some of the things that have gone wrong. And this was a game, Harden scoring 42, the Rockets up 7 midway through the third quarter, within 1 with about 7 minutes left in the game, got back within 4 in the final couple of minutes, had Harden seemingly making everything. It was right there on the table, and the Rockets, they couldn't get a stop, and outside of James Harden, they just did not have enough help from the supporting cast. Those are very familiar themes. Now, they are still playing well, but the reality, as we hit the break, and as promised, we're turning a little bigger picture tonight because we're essentially now in a stretch with over a week of no basketball. The question is going to be, are the Rockets playing well enough to overcome the headwinds that as we get closer to the playoffs, we just have to accept the reality. The Rockets are going to be fighting, if not from a lower seed in the playoffs, certainly not from an advantage position. I think realistically, you know, your best case is about the 4 seed at this point, and you need a ton of things to go right if you're going to get back in the top 3. Not impossible, but realistically, the Rockets, it's not that anything is off the table for them. In fact, you can make an argument they've been playing really good basketball. They're going to get Clint Capella back, but their margin of error, and it's a theme we've been saying since December, it's gone. And so in many ways, it may be only fitting that they go into the playoffs with a reduced margin of error as well. Now, jumping back into the program for our second segment, breaking down the 121-111 loss the Rockets suffered Wednesday night in Minneapolis to the Timberwolves. We'll try and keep this segment a little more individualized as far as the game as a whole. I wanted to start off discussing where they've been without Clint Capella, where they are at the All-Star break. We'll do that towards the end, too, because clearly we're at a point in the season where the bigger picture analysis is important, and the Rockets, with this loss tonight, best case they can be is tied for 4th in the Western Conference. We'll see what happens. Warriors-Blazers, and if they are, the Blazers have the tiebreaker. So the Rockets clearly not where they want to be at the All-Star break with the season. If it were to end at this point, they would not have home court advantage. So it's an important chance to take stock. It's also the last game without Clint Capella. So even though they were 9-6 in those 15 games, I think it's important to note that, generally speaking, even though they've let some winnable games go of late, you should still be pretty proud of how they have played. At the same time, you lose a game like this, and it's a reminder of just how much you're trying to fight off and how that start to the season is still, in many ways, holding you back and making you fight with one arm tied behind your back. And we'll talk about that more as we close out the podcast. As far as this individual game, besides the fact that you didn't have Clint Capella and, to a lesser extent, Austin Rivers, because as mentioned, the minus 10 rebounding advantage again, Minnesota 13 on the offensive glass, shot over 54% from the field, the points in the paint advantage was massive. A lot of that comes from Karl-Anthony Towns, 25-9, against a Houston team starting Kenneth Faried at 6'8" at the center spot. And I know some of you guys may not want to hear that, but the reality is, without Capella, this is a tough matchup, especially on the road, and especially if Jeff Teague gets hot with 27-12. So I'm not that down on the way Houston played. I don't think anyone necessarily had a terrible effort tonight. I just thought Houston wasn't good enough, and it was a game that you would have liked to have stolen. If you got a stop here or there, maybe the result could have flipped. Ultimately, they did not. But in this segment, aside from the guys you didn't have, because I feel like the last segment, we've talked too much about, okay, the Rockets, they were without Capella, so here's why they lost the rebounding battle, and here's where they are at this point in the season, and how much of that is correlated with Capella, CP3, the guys they've had injured all season long. Let's move to the guys who did play tonight. Because in terms of what the Rockets could control, the big thing for me, you mentioned Jeff Teague, who had 27-12 on 11-16 shooting. Chris Paul and Eric Gordon combined had 29 points on 26 shots. Again, for Teague, 27-16. CP3 and Gordon, 29-26. Paul, just 4-13, 2-8 from 3. Gordon, barely better, 5-13, 3-8 from 3. Now, they did at least probe. Chris Paul had 8 assists, 5 boards. Eric Gordon had 6 assists, 3 rebounds. So a Minnesota team, Karl-Anthony Towns, not known as a true rim protector by any stretch of the imagination, but the Rockets did do a good job of testing the middle, the soft underbelly of that defense. So you give some credit to them for that. They did attack, but by and large, they need to make more shots. Part of why the Rockets weren't that down after the Oklahoma City game, I thought the Thunder played extremely well, and of course, they're a big team. they would hit you hard without Capella the same way the Timberwolves did. So between that absence and Chris Paul shooting nearly 50% from the field, putting up 18, 10, and 9, being so dynamic as a floor general, pushing the pace, showing burst. If you have hashtag playoff CP3, that's part of why the Rockets didn't feel that bad. And then Monday against the Mavs, 17 and 11, 50% from three, no turnovers. That is the Chris Paul that you need. The version tonight, 4 of 13, 2 of 8, it's not. And I don't think he looked that different. Again, he had 5 rebounds, 8 assists. I don't think he looked limited. I thought he moved just fine. He just missed shots that he needs to make. And it was compounded by the fact that the guy opposite him, Jeff Teague, was making those shots, including a huge one when the Rockets seemingly had all the momentum, Harden going crazy in the last 3 minutes, and Teague, of all people, answered him. So you tip your hat to Teague. But as far as the Rockets are concerned, if you guys remember a year ago, I used to say that the variables were Clint Capella and Eric Gordon. Well, now the variables are Chris Paul and Eric Gordon. Capella, when he is healthy, has stepped into that number two role after James Harden. Now, he doesn't really create his own offense, but from game to game, he's fairly stable in terms of what he gives you. This year, and some of it's injuries, because Chris Paul and Eric Gordon have each missed extended time, but neither of them has consistently gotten into a groove. And Chris, you had hoped he was. I'm not going to say that now he's out of it because he had one bad shooting game after he played extremely well versus Oklahoma City and Dallas. Let's not overreact. But the fact is, the season as a whole, Chris and Eric have not shot as well as they need to. Their efficiency has dipped from a year ago, and we can cite the injuries, we can blame any number of things. But the reality is, they just need to be better. And generally speaking, as great as James Harden is, especially if there's no Clint Capella, he needs help. Tonight, 29 on 26 shots for Paul and Gordon combined versus 27 on 16 from Jeff Teague. And some of it, again, Chris Paul and Eric Gordon, they're on the wrong side of 30. They are not the stoppers defensively. They're good team defenders, but individually, they don't really move that well from side to side. So maybe that's where you need an Austin Rivers. Well, he wasn't available. So the Rockets, the backcourt tonight, I really thought, in terms of the rebounding disadvantage, Karl Anthony Towns, Saric going nuts. Saric did most of his heavy lifting at the beginning of the game. Taj Gibson off the bench on a throwback 10 and 8 in 22 minutes. I think that's to be expected. The Rockets, they know they're going to be outmanned. Doris Burke, throughout the telecast, I listened to ESPN some tonight because I really respect the analysis that she does. And she pointed out that really it's just a convergence of styles. The Timberwolves shot just 23s. Now, they made 10 of them. Salute to Jeff Teague. Well, actually, made just one three, but it was a huge one late. But the Timberwolves, even though they shot 50% from three, they only shot 20 because their emphasis is on putting the ball in the paint. And you know, without Capella, that's where the Rockets are weak. So you know going into the game that that's how they're going to play. And they did. The fact is, the Rockets, they need to be able to outgun them. Threes are better than two. The math problem that they've created in the past for so many teams. Well, tonight, James Harden did his part, made eight threes. The problem is, his teammates, Chris Paul and Eric Gordon in particular, just did not make enough of them. And defensively, I know they got Iman Shumpert, and he's been a pretty solid defender in the three games since they picked him up. But realistically, he's not going to offset the lack of height, which against a team that big, at a minus 10 rebounding disadvantage and 13 offensive boards, it's not the wing defense that was a problem. It's the second chance points. It's the way you were bullied and bludgeoned around the rim. And you know that going in. You can't get taller, so you just need to trust your shooters, your playmakers, and they did fine attacking the rim, but you just got to make more threes. They didn't. This year, I think there's reason to hope that they'll be better, but it comes back to the same thing we said in the first segment. Have they wasted too much time getting to that point? That's what we'll find out. Ultimately, those two guys, the veterans, Chris Paul and Eric Gordon, they've got to be better. And even though PJ Tucker was a little better tonight, 8 points, eight boards, made two of his five threes, he, over the past few games, has largely been MIA. Scored just 5 points combined in his last three. And I know it's not his job to score. He's a top-notch defender, but that's part of the reason why the Rockets are going after Markieff Morris and why they could also use Daniel House in terms of bringing in more reinforcements, particularly at the four spot. As the season has moved along, PJ's numbers and scoring have significantly dipped. October, he was 41% from three. November, he was 43%. Then he was 35, 34% in December and January, going month by month. In February, up until tonight, he was shooting just 16%. Now, again, he was a little better tonight at 2 of 5. So hopefully that's the start of a turnaround. He'll also have some time off. But I think a lot of it, he's been playing nearly 36 minutes a game, 34 tonight. That's a career high for a guy who's 33 years old, and he's undersized, playing against bigger guys at the four spot. Maybe that's taking a toll on his legs. And he's not going to become a dynamic defender, he is a dynamic defender. But in terms of his height, his rebounds, he's not going to magically develop a different body. But you need him to step up in many of the same ways that you count on Chris Paul and Eric Gordon. He's not nearly the same playmaker, but you need him to make shots. Lately, he has not. And tonight, he was better. I'm not pinning this one loss on him, but I do think it's fair to put him in the same boat as Chris Paul and Eric Gordon. These are highly paid veterans who need to be the supporting cast. And ultimately, James Harden, even with a bad shoulder, only getting the free throw line four times because he didn't take as much contact as he normally does, also banged knees late in the game. That should have been a clear foul, by the way, and was not. Look, James, I know it's easy to say, and every fan base with a star seems to do it, but it's especially true in this case. He needs more help. Because this is as historic a stretch as it comes. And you still lost by double digits to a Minnesota team that's below 500. Again, the grand scheme, no Capella. The Timberwolves are big. Also no Austin Rivers. It's a tough matchup. It's one game. It's on the road. None of this is anything you should worry about in terms of Chris Paul in particular. He's coming off two really strong games. And now if you worry about his age, his injuries, he's going to get over a week off. So I don't think in the grand scheme, any of this, as far as the narrative of the season, is dramatically worsened by tonight, but it's a reminder of what's happened all season long. Despite James Harden's brilliance, the Rockets are just a middle-of-the-pack playoff team at this point, 33-24, 9 games over 500, 57 games in, because for all of James Harden's historic greatness, the help has been inconsistent at best. And as we go down the stretch run, can he get enough help to overcome what is now a pretty daunting deficit in the standings? And if they don't, can they overcome not having home court advantage that often in the playoffs and potentially being on the wrong side of the bracket? Time will tell. That's what we'll talk about in the third and final segment momentarily as we wrap up the show, the final one before the All-Star break. Final thoughts as we close out Wednesday night's show, the recap of the 121-111 loss the Rockets suffered in Minnesota. Apologies for the end of the last segment. I didn't mean to say that it's the last show before the All-Star break. I meant that this is the final game. We will have a show either Thursday or Friday trying to get some more perspective on where the Rockets are. Not at the midway point, but at the break. It's an appropriate point to think bigger picture. Because ultimately, the Rockets, no Capella, no Austin Rivers, the Timberwolves, no Andrew Wiggins. No one's at full strength. A lot of teams are just ready to recharge, get a few days off. And Houston has two big-time spotlight games on the other side of the break. At LA, LeBron James and the Lakers now below 500. They're going to be playing with a huge sense of urgency. Then at Golden State, you better believe the Warriors now the one seed. They've got Boogie Cousins back. They're 0-2 against the Rockets this year. You better believe that they, on national TV, ABC primetime Saturday night, are going to want to take out some revenge on the Rockets. So it's going to be a pretty big spotlight for the Rockets out of the break. They need to play well. And realistically, I think that they've generally played better when the lights have been on this year. If you've had a problem from time to time, it's been in games where you haven't had expectations, especially the last month or so. We mentioned New Orleans, Orlando. I guess you could throw this one in there, but I think Minnesota is more talented than those two teams, especially relative to the Capella absence. So we'll see what happens in the days ahead. Can the Rockets add Markieff Morris or any other buyout target to fortify their depth? The Blazers, a team they're battling potentially for home court in the first round. They added Enes Kanter today, so clearly I think the emphasis, the need is there for Daryl Morey to do something to fortify the depth. As mentioned, PJ Tucker's shooting has slipped the further we've gone into the season. Perhaps that's a need they can address to take his minutes down a little bit, get him a bit more efficient, maybe save his legs a little bit defensively as well. We'll be talking about that in the days ahead a lot. We'll see what the Rockets do on the buyout market. I do expect them to sign someone. Who will that be? Time will tell. Ultimately, though, they do have to sign someone by next Thursday, the game in LA, because that's the two-week mark since they opened up all those roster spots with the wave of trade deadline day trades. They only have 14 days before having to sign at least someone to a fully guaranteed contract. So whether it be Markieff Morris, Daniel House, or someone else on the market, they will have a deal with someone by next Thursday. Who will it be? Stay tuned. We'll be covering that and also looking at some of these bigger picture items. What can they do? Who do they want to match up with in the playoffs? We've got a lot of time to talk about that in the days ahead. The last thought I'll leave you with tonight, and it's not so much related to this one game, because as mentioned, this game in a vacuum, it's not that big of a deal. It's a tough matchup. You're without Clint Capella. It's an understandable loss to a much bigger Minnesota team led by an all-star in Karl-Anthony Towns. And Jeff Teague, if he has 27-12, makes 11 of 16 from the field, that'll make them tough against anyone. I know they've struggled of late, but again, he missed 8 of their last games before this week when they won 2 in a row, first against the Clippers, now the Rockets, since he came back. So tip your hat They played well. I don't think this is an unforgivable, inexcusable loss like, say, the Pelicans game a couple of weeks ago. This is not that. I'm really not that down on the Rockets as a team. However, if you want to be upset, I think, and this is an appropriate point to say it with no more games for 8 days, the thing to be upset about is the start to the season. Because realistically, the Rockets going to the All-Star break, they've won 9 of 15, a 600 winning clip without Clint Capella. That's as much as you could ask for a guy who has clearly been their second most valuable player this season after James Harden. And assuming no other injuries, look, every squad has injuries throughout a year. Now, maybe they don't have as many cumulative ones as the Rockets, but as far as Clint Capella individually, if this is his only extended absence and he ends up playing mid-60s in games of an 82-game slate, especially for a big man, that's fine. If all he misses is this 15-game stretch, in the grand scheme, that's not a big deal, and you won 9 of the 15 games. If you're disappointed, and I think we all are to some degree, being in the 5 spot, 33 and 24, still single digits, not double digits, over 500, the problem is the start to the year. The 1-5, the 4-7, the 11-14, the reason that even though you are 22-10 in your last 32 games, 31 of which is this ridiculous historic James Harden run, that you are still trying to just get into the top four of the West, let alone a top three and an advantaged playoff seed. It's not Clint Capella's injury that you should be frustrated about. It's not the team's effort tonight. It's what's happened early in the year, and are they going to be able to overcome that? We'll see. If they play well enough, we've seen this team go into Oracle and win. We've seen them go into Denver and win. They played Oklahoma City. It was in Houston, but they played them very hard a couple of nights ago. They won against them on Christmas. So we have seen them play the league's best. They've beaten Toronto. They've beaten Boston. They've hung in there with Milwaukee, and that was without Chris Paul and Eric Gordon. So the Rockets, this might be the team that even if they are a lower seed, can overcome a lot of that. They have to this year so far. But the question is there a point where you're asking too much? And really, is there a point where maybe James Harden gets a little taxed because he's had to do so much in this streak, and sometimes it still isn't even enough to get the win, as it wasn't tonight. Maybe he and the Rockets can overcome, but that's going to be the theme, because the deeper we go, the more, not just the number one seed, clearly that's gone, but even the 2 and 3, that's not off the table, but down 5, down 6 games, only 25 left, those are pretty steep odds. That's a long hill to climb. I mean, you might have to go, you know, 21-4, 20-5, some crazy stretch like that, and then hope for a little bit of help to really make a run. And while that's not impossible, you're looking at having to play 800 basketball winning clip or better to really get back in. That's pretty daunting. So at this point, again, you know, the Rockets won their last title when they were a 6 seed. Nothing is impossible. And when you have James Harden, you have a chance. But the question is, have you put yourself behind the eight ball one too many times? And if you want to blame something, I would say it goes back to the offseason. You know, we've talked a lot about the Rockets being able to patch holes. Kenneth Faried, his defense has not been good. But offensively, you know, especially against the bad teams, he had 12-11 tonight. But I mentioned, you know, his energy when he had 17 on 7-8 shooting Monday. He gets you wins against teams like Dallas and Phoenix that without Capella might otherwise be kind of stingy. But his hustle doesn't let that happen. That's an end-season pickup for nothing. Austin Rivers was essential in getting you the Christmas Day win against the Thunder and a few others. Good on-ball defense, some clutch threes late. We know what Daniel House Jr. has done. Hopefully they can bring him back. Iman Shumpert needs to shoot better, but his defense, I thought, has been very solid his first 3 games. Going into tonight, Rockets' defensive rating with Iman Shumpert was 97 when he was not in the game. It sails to nearly 118, so he's definitely been a positive contributor defensively. They wanted him for some time. They've done a lot of good things during the season as far as an organization pickups, but the guys they got in the offseason, Carmelo Anthony, they gave up on after 10 games. The Rockets lost 6 of those 10. James Ennis, they dealt away for basically nothing, a 2021 second-round pick swap. Sorry, Bema Thug and hashtag second-round pick guy, that's basically nothing. Michael Carter-Williams barely played. He was trash when he did. These are the guys that Daryl Morey, I know it was for the minimum, but they believed in. They said going into training camp that they felt that James Ennis could do a lot of things that Trevor Ariza did a year ago. It didn't work out. And the good thing, no, I'm not calling for Daryl Morey's job or anything crazy. He's one of the best in the league. And he has recovered extraordinarily well. Again, all of his misses, boy, is he made up for and then some. Faried, Rivers, House, Shumpert. Maybe we'll add Markieff Morris. We'll see what happens in the days ahead. Daryl Morey is as good as anyone at MacGyvering his way out of tough situations. And he's done it again this year. The problem, and of course it's not just that. I think some of it too, there's a bit of a hangover effect with the Western Conference Finals run, the near miss a year ago. Also, Harden had the hamstring injury early in the year, which cost him some games. And even when he returned, he wasn't 100%. If he was, who knows? Maybe this crazy 30-point run starts even earlier than it did in mid-December. Maybe you can do it in late November instead. But the point is, regardless of your reasons, the offseason signings, Ennis, MCW, Mello, those not working out, that plays at least a part in the early season losses. And of course, the depth, which you go late November, early December, when they were losing games like at Washington, at Cleveland, they had no business losing because there were only six, seven guys that they trusted in the entire team at the time. The rotation was so short despite being early in the year. Daryl Morey has fixed those since then, and he's done a great job. But the question is, you know, for him, it's the same as a team. Have you cost yourself too much to where, as great as they are with James Harden playing this well, and I think the team as a whole will bounce back once Clint Capella comes back, did you lose too much early in the year, 1-5, 4-7, 11-14? To me, as we enter the All-Star break, which is two-thirds of the way through the season, 57 of 82, Rockets at 33-24, that's the thing to think about. And if you want to be upset, if you want to be sad, that's the thing to be sad about. It's not just one or two games in the last month that you've let get away that otherwise could have or should have been wins. No, you generally played very well, and you've had some big-time wins. You should be proud of how hard they have fought, especially with the injuries. Chris Paul, Eric Gordon, Clint Capella all missing a lot of time. The run of late has been admirable. The question is, did they give up too much in the early going? And everyone, including Daryl Morey in the front office, has to look at themselves in the mirror and ask themselves that question. Maybe it doesn't matter. Maybe they go on a crazy run on the other side of the All-Star break. Or who knows? If they're healthy, maybe they can do what the 95 Rockets did, the last championship Houston squad. And even as the 5 seed, the 6 seed, who knows? Maybe the Rockets ultimately are better off in the 6 spot than the 4 or the 5. You can make that argument, although I think it depends on whether the 3 is Oklahoma City or Denver. I would not want the 6 seed if the 3 seed is Oklahoma City, because they're a good enough team, Paul George and MVP, they could beat you. Whereas Denver, not that they couldn't beat you, but I'd feel pretty good about that matchup, even without home court, especially if the upside is you win it and you're not on the same side of the bracket as the Warriors in round two, when if you face Golden State in round two, they're pretty much fully rusted, barely having to expend any energy to beat whoever the 8 seed is, the sacrificial lamb. There's a reason you want the Warriors in the Western Conference Finals, if at all possible. So who knows? You might even get to a point in which you prefer the 6 rather than the 4-5 line if you're not playing Oklahoma City, because it gets you on the other side of the bracket than Golden State. But the point is, debating 4-5-6, which is the realistic scenarios at this point for the Rockets, it's not the end of the world. It's nothing you can't overcome. It's not like a year ago when the one seed was in play and you had all the advantages, and even that wasn't enough. So as far as Houston is concerned, nothing's off the table. But if you want to lament things, I don't think it's losses like tonight. I think it's what happened early in the year. Just too many missed opportunities, especially the offseason signings. To me, that start is what's really plaguing the Rockets. It's not the 9-6 stretch without Clint Capella. It's not the 22-10 the last 32 games. Nope, it's the fact that still doesn't feel good enough because of what you're trying to overcome. To me, as the Rockets approach the midpoint, that best sums up where they are to this point in the season. So with that, on that relatively somber note, that's where we'll wrap up this Wednesday evening episode. As always, I appreciate you guys so much for tuning in. And if you want more content before our next episode, I strongly encourage you to check out Twitter, because that's the source of real-time analysis. If there's news on Markieff Morris, which there have been reports that he decides or plans to decide this week, then that's where it'll break. And of course, I'll have it on my timeline at Ben Dubose, but you can also follow the Locked On Rockets handle or the Locked On NBA Net handle. That's the curated feed from experts across our wonderful Locked On podcast network. Also, if you'd be kind enough to subscribe, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, wherever you listen to your podcast, subscribe, leave 5-star reviews. Even if you can't advertise, which, by the way, if you're interested, I would certainly love your business. We've got a rapidly growing audience of Rockets fans during this fun season. LockedOnRockets@gmail.com. Email me. We've got some great introductory specials. But even if you can't do that, just subscribe, leave 5-star reviews. That's how you get the benefit of episodes even before I can post them to Twitter. And I get the benefit of, with your subscription and hopefully your 5-star review, making this show look attractive to other potential advertisers and keeping the business model rolling as the most regular podcast covering Houston Rockets basketball. So for tonight, this is where I will sign off. Again, thanks so much for listening. The unhappy final, Timberwolves 121, Rockets 111. I'll be back in the next couple of days working on an interview to round up a little bit of broader perspective on where the Rockets are at the midway point, or the All-Star break, I should say. We were past the midway point, but also what they need to do over the last 25 games. How do they overcome the headwinds that we've been discussing? That's what we have the next week plus to break down, which we'll do right here at Locked On Rockets, your home for daily coverage of all things Houston Rockets basketball.